Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities. From the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front room. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
Tonight on Revolt Black News Weekly.
His case represents hundreds, if not thousands, of others who are not receiving care in our prisons.
Inmates behind bars and their alleged mistreatment. How prison life is causing a nationwide uproar.
We've never seen him in that condition, and it really just hurt us.
Then,
Kanye West is making a reactionary statement.
The debate over reverse racism, Kanye's fashion fumble, and celebrity responsibility when it comes to social media.
I'm Kennedy Rue. First, Marlon Wayans opens up about his career. And Emmett Till's story is told through his mother's eyes. That's all in the remix. And
there is a lot of progress that's been made, but a lot of times I do see that in fashion shows or in campaigns.
I'm guest correspondent Demetria Ovalor. Tonight, we're talking about fashion and body positivity and acceptance. Is it real or just tokenism? We get into it. All of that tonight as the Black News Revolution starts right now. Hey everyone, I'm guest host Rochelle Ritchie. We begin with the hotbed topic of prison mistreatment and the conditions inmates are living in. One story has shocked the nation, bringing to light what's happening on the inside. That's tonight's top story.
This was Castileo Vaughn in Healthier Times, and these are the images sent to his sister with the message, "Get help." The disturbing images were posted by his sister on her Facebook page with the caption pleading for her brother to receive care.
You know, unfortunately, when I saw the photos, the first thing I thought was that it's important that his case is being highlighted, but his case represents so many hundreds, if not thousands, of others who are not receiving care in our prison.
An investigation by the Equal Justice Initiative revealed that Alabama has the most dangerous prison system in the United States. In just 4 years, there have been 111 deaths in Alabama prisons. And from 2018 to 2019, 280 inmates needed hospital treatment for injuries resulting from assault by fellow prisoners or even correctional officers. In a statement, the Alabama Department of Corrections claims that Castileo signed an inmate authorization form for the release of health records. They say he underwent surgery for a bowel obstruction, and following his surgery, he opted to be discharged against medical advice and has repeatedly refused a medical assessment and treatment. His family says that's a lie.
The people on the outside stand with the people on the inside of Alabama State Correctional Facilities who are now on a labor strike. We never abolished slavery in this country. We gave it an exception, and these inmates are now working for free.
Several videos are being posted online from Alabama inmates who are speaking out, outraged over poor prison conditions and mistreatment.
Look how nasty this cell is, man.
Some are also exposing the unsanitary living conditions.
How rusty the door is. This is where food is supposed to come through.
Food that inmates say is not enough or even edible. And in one sick, extreme form of punishment, a guard attempts to serve an inmate a dead rat.
It tells you a lot about the seriousness of the matter, that people are willing to compromise their liberty to stand up for the fact that they're being mistreated. Well, I think that's really courageous for them to do so, because the fact of the matter is that there's a lot of punishment involved in disobeying rules in the correctional system.
They are about to put me in segregation and close me out. I mean, it put me in lockup for some months because of videos, because of me spreading awareness to the public about our living conditions here.
Our correctional system doesn't operate unless people who are serving time work. They function because the people who are serving time are forced to work and are often paid just the most abysmal rates for their work. You know, our correctional system as it currently stands really is an extension of slavery and Jim Crow and everything else that's meant to keep people of color subjugated in this country.
Joining me now tonight for more on this case of Castillejo Vaughn and the alarming images that are reopening the discussion around prison mistreatment are his attorney, Lee Merritt, and his sister, Casey Vaughn. Casey, I want to start with you. I mean, those pictures of your brother, they went viral. They are everywhere, and they're really shocking to see. As his sister, tell me how your family felt when you all saw the condition of your brother.
Yes, ma'am. When we first seen the pictures, we were in disbelief because we couldn't believe that another human being would allow someone to get in this condition without them getting any medical help, and they could just count over him every day. So we really were in disbelief alongside being hurt because him being our loved one, we've never seen him in that condition. And it really just hurt us really bad.
And I understand that when you all received the photos, there was a note attached to them that said, get help. I mean, when you see that get help, who did that come from? Where did that come from?
Yes, ma'am. It came from another inmate inside of the prison. And he just wanted us, he knew he was the only one that thought to find his family or somebody that cared about him to see him live and not die.
Lee, you know, this is a case that you have taken on. I'm so glad that you have. You know, how long has this sort of been going on with your client? And is he even able to speak to you to tell you what happened?
So speaking to Mr. Vaughn has been an issue because he is incarcerated in the prison. The Alabama Prison Authority, the Department of Corrections, has been doing everything that they can to keep him out of the public to try to sort of bury this story. But the A condition initiated, I guess, back in August, where he had a surgery on his small intestines, where he had a section of his small intestines removed, and his emaciated state began shortly after that because he couldn't take in any food. The surgery resulted in an infection, and his condition grew increasingly worse over time.
Now, there was actually a study, Lee, that was done by the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they actually did an investigation on the Elmore Correctional Facility where Mr. Vaughn is being held, and they found multiple incidents of where prisoners were not getting treatment. I mean, some prisoners were having to have amputations because of they were not getting the diabetic, you know, treatment that they needed. Others were, there was another gentleman similar to Mr. Vaughn who had a abdominal surgery, and he bled from his rectum and died. Is this a problem within just the Alabama state prisons, or is this something that is a national issue that needs to be addressed?
Mr. Vaughn's condition is an embodiment of the inhumane conditions of prisoners all throughout the United States. As you know, we boast the largest population in human history, 7.6 million people under some form of state supervision, prison, or parole. And those prisons are almost like a black box. People go in there and it's very rare that any word comes out about their condition. And even in this case, the only reason we know about Mr. Vaughn's condition is because other prisoners took the initiative and smuggled out images to his family. And his family was quite brave in pushing that narrative about what was going on. Otherwise, we wouldn't have heard about what was going on with Castillejo. But it's certainly a reflection of the condition of American prisons in general.
So, Casey, I understand that you and your family have been able to visit the prison and have some sort of conversation with the prison guards. Tell me a little bit about that and if they've given you any insight as to what is happening with your brother.
Yes, ma'am. Well, when me and my sister got to visit Castillejo, the prison guards were initially very rude to us. They turned us around and told us that we couldn't come. And it kind of really just brought us down even more because we're like, why can't we even visit him after we were told that we would be allowed visitation? So then when we did get to see him, he broke down crying when he seen us, and the prison guards came over. to see what was going on, but he was just really hurt because he's like, it took all of this for someone to get me attention. And the prison guards have still been very rude. They don't help us with anything. That's not how we go about getting any information about him at all. The wardens at the prisons, Elmore or Staten, I believe, they don't communicate with us at all. So it's just really been hard. And I really don't like how on their end, I feel like they should be held accountable to do more in regards to letting the family know the health conditions of their loved ones.
And Lee, I know we're wrapping this up, but guys, I do want to ask this question. I mean, does the prison have any obligation to inform a family member that a loved one, inmate or not, is undergoing a very serious surgery and is experiencing some sort of medical trauma or condition? Are they obligated to do that?
There's no legal obligation for them to inform the family. One would argue that there's a moral obligation, but there's nothing under the law that requires prison guards or prison workers to inform family members.
All right. Well, you would think that human decency, like you said, would trump the law sometimes. Thank you all for joining us tonight. Coming up, we get into the conversation about the response.
Hey there. Ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.
Ability of influencers, great and small, and what that means across social media spaces. Welcome back. Reverse racism has become a hotbed topic, much of it coming on the heels of Kanye's White Lives Matter t-shirt, making a controversial fashion statement that lit up allies and adversaries alike. So tonight, we're taking that conversation to another level, asking if the notion of reverse racism is such a thing. So joining me tonight on this conversation is Whitley Yates and Be Conscious Lee. So Conscious Lee, I'm going to start with you. When you were watching the Kanye West Showcase White Lives Matter t-shirt on fashion's biggest stage, what was the message that was being presented to the world?
I feel like the verdict's still out on that. Like, I still, you know, I watched the Kanye West interview with Tucker Carlson trying to make sense, to not be facetious or not be petty in terms of coming to a conclusion. But what I would say is we've seen a black man kind of making an outcry for attention.
And Willie, you posted on Twitter, you know, I want to read what you said. You said, can you imagine being outwardly enraged over a t-shirt on someone else's back? Emotional collectivism. What did you mean by that?
So I think in the terms of what Kanye has been going through consistently within the fashion industry, to be in a place where he is at New York Fashion Week and to wear a shirt that says White Lives Matter, to me is a statement in and of itself. And the Black Lives Matter movement was forged from this thought, idea, perception, and experience that white lives have always mattered more than black lives. But there is something so triggering about this undergirth of our society that when it's stated, read, or seen, that we get enraged as a people.
I don't know that if it's we as black people necessarily get enraged, because when you hear white people say, you know, white supremacists say white lives matter, everyone gets enraged when they hear that too. So to put it just the onus on black people, I think that sort of dismisses the reality that it's offensive for all, not just black.
I mean, I would go deeper and say that we recognizing that even in, you know what I'm saying, her statement, recognizing that Kanye West is making a reactionary statement. So we are able to really prioritize, what you say, emotional collectivism. To me, I think that there was more emotional collectivism with the idea that Black Lives Matter that has seen policy, i.e. stop wokeness or making it where literally the concept of BLM is being outlawed in the classroom. So I would say that if we have the same energy for emotional outrage and collectivism, I would say it's always a whataboutism. We recognize too that the All Lives Matter people ain't said much about the t-shirt White Lives Matter. So we see that there's a lot of a political gaslighting, some would put it, you feel me? And I think that's the part where we see a Black man crying out for attention. Last week, he wanted us to boycott Gap, and he said that these white people was coming in between him and his Black children. The next week for attention, he's saying White Lives Matter. We see there's a lot of mixed messaging in what Kanye West is giving. And we think, I would argue that it's very dangerous for the Black people that really follow, bro.
And I would disagree, because I would say his message from Gap and that t-shirt are one and the same. The exact same institutions, the exact same issues that he is dealing with in the fashion industry are from the exact lives on his shirt. So what he is battling and what he is actively speaking out against are the exact same thing. Is that as a Black man, his intellectual property, his ideas are being utilized without his permission from this organization, group, fashion entity, et cetera. And so here in a space that's for them, that was created for them, that he was locked out of, that he is now accepted into or tolerated in, he is making that statement.
So the counter actually to Black Lives Matter is not even White Lives Matter. It is All Lives Matter. Do you think that would have been a better statement consciously for him to have on these shirts?
If he wanted to make the statement, he could have said Black Lives Matter is a scam. If that is the statement that he wants to galvanize attention on, hey, multiple things can be true at the same time. I would argue that our society nuance be kicking our ass. You see what I'm saying? So what I would say, he could have said, hey, BLM is a scam. He didn't have to go into the I'm going to make a statement at the expense of my own people that I'm trying to, you know, go at. So we can't cap and act like the statement that he made wasn't facetious. It wasn't trying to be gaslighted. Mm-hmm. He wasn't looking for outrage. He wasn't looking to do, you know what we told Boosie? You bullying me. That's what a lot of Black conservatives talk about when other Black people disagree with them. So we see that he already is trying to be codified in appealing to whiteness, white supremacy, and the very structures that he's trying to get us to boycott.
And in that same breath that consciously is making his statements, Whitley, do you think that Kanye's sort of recent conservative antics make him a white apologist?
I do not believe that his antics make him a white apologist, but I also understand why people feel this way. He didn't say anything about Black Lives Matter, but wearing a White Lives Matter t-shirt has somehow means that he's calling it a scam when that's not what the shirt said. And
was his response to the shirt. His response to the shirt was BLM is a scam. That was his first response to the shirt. The second response
to the shirt. He said a lot. He did a whole interview and went from Black Lives Matter to TikTok to all these different types of things. And so to say that Black Lives Matter has scammed people, specifically Black people in the Black community, that is the truth. And that is where we are in this society. But talking about this shirt and talking about the idea that White Lives Matter, is that not a statement that we should be discussing today? Is that not the precipice and the foundation of which the movement was created? Because Black lives weren't valued the same as white lives? Can we not whether his intention was to enrage, can we not put attention on the fact that white lives have always mattered in policy, have always mattered in the Constitution, and consistently matter in institutions?
That can be true. However, when you have white supremacists that go around saying this very same thing, that really dilutes the message that he is trying to convey. I hear what you're saying. I'm sure our viewers hear it as well. But when you go around saying white lives matter, if I run out here and say white pride, but I'm trying to bring light to the fact that white pride has always existed and it's the reason why my Blackness is such a problem in America, no one's going to hear the message because they know the history of what white pride means.
I think that we need to take a step back, circumspectly look at what he's saying. I understand his message. Did it need to come off of the exact same manner in which the Black Lives Matter t-shirts are? Did it need to come at this exact time with this in this audience? No. And I understand people who are upset about that. But I do think that the topic should be discussed, and I don't think that it should be ignored.
All right. Whitley, Consciously, thank you so much for a spirited conversation. All right, let's move on to the headlines beyond our borders. Get that passport out as we go black all over the world.
First up, Russia.
My view is that I'm optimistic. I think she's going to be freed. I think she has the right strategy of contrition, a good legal team. There's going to be a prisoner swap, though, and I think it'll be two for two.
Former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson sharing his positive outlook about a possible Brittany Griner prisoner swap. Talks are underway and could potentially happen before the end of the year.
It always needs to be free Brittany Griner until it's Brittany Griner's free. And I hope that happens. I wish it would have happened last month. I wish it would have happened yesterday, but I hope it happens sometime soon.
We are at 239 days and counting since BG's detainment in Russia. She continues to serve her 9-year sentence and is currently awaiting the appeal trial, which begins October 25th.
The reality of the situation is that once that hearing is held and the order is finalized, BG's now in the position where she could be moved to a labor camp.
That, as the women's basketball season overseas kicks off, a number of players are showing solidarity, opting not to play in Russia. Many are also turning to social media to push for her release with the hashtag FreeBG.
I don't think anybody can go play in Russia right now. I think that I'm not aware that anybody can go there, but as for Americans and other European players, I don't think anybody's going over to Russia until BG is home.
Next up, we head to Nigeria.
Nigerians have not actually seen anything practical in so many ways as to reduce or minimize the consequences of these natural disasters that are happening almost every year.
The flood season has taken over West Africa with a death toll that continues to climb. Rescue workers are currently trying to recover missing passengers from a vessel overtaken by the flooding, which was carrying more than 100 people, 76 of those still missing.
We're heading to Jigbam community that's been ravaged by flooding. Many families have been displaced.
And 840 miles southeast of Nigeria, Cameroon is in the hot seat as Nigeria blames Cameroonians for this year's damaging and deadly floods. This season has shed light on the issues of climate change, which has affected the food supply chain, destroyed homes, and intercontinental travel.
This is terrible. Look at this. We are literally on the river right now, on the road. This is the main road. It's crazy, man.
Lastly, we head to Uganda as calls for a separation of state and social media when it comes to politics. President Yoweri Museveni removed his son, General Muizi Kainerugaba, from his post after his Twitter fingers led to foreign affairs problems between countries like Tigray and Kenya.
I don't think the intimidation that he's giving us is called for. They are totally uncalled for.
I don't have the ambition to be president. I'm very happy being in the military, and that's where I intend to stay for some time.
Although amends between countries were made, his son leaves as a decorated 4-star general ready to command his new position over the Uganda People's Defense Forces.
We'll continue to stay on top of those headlines. Stay with us for the entertainment remix and Who's in the System when Revolt Black News Weekly returns.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Kennedy Rue. Time now for the latest entertainment headlines that are popping off in the remix. Queen B joins Drake with 6 American Music Award nominations. Beyonce, Drake, and The Weeknd are all nominated for the most coveted category, Artists of the Year. The AMAs air November 20th on ABC.
Be small down there.
Like this?
Emmett never thought anything would happen to him.
The story of Emmett Till was kind of told to me as a means to prevent anything like that of ever happening to me.
A concerned mom's warning to her 14-year-old son, Jalen Hall, and the star of gripping new film, Till.
This was my boy, Emmett Till.
The horrific true tale of the lynched Chicago teen is in limited theaters tomorrow and goes wide the 28th.
Talk to me about, you know, what you hope people your age take away from this film.
There are a lot of things, be it in our school system or just in general, that we are not taught. But with a movie like this, on a scale like this, there's no reason why the youth of our nation, me included, can't learn about these things, so we can be inspired or changed in ways that may affect us greatly down the line.
Sid, it's just actors!
I don't think you're allowed to touch me unless I sign a waiver. Oh!
Marlon Wayans, Kelly Rowland, and Stranger Things star Priya Ferguson star in Netflix's new Halloween comedy, The Curse of Bridge Hollow. The spooky fun begins streaming October 14th.
Uncle Marlon, I want to start with you because I venture to say The Curse of Bridge Hollow is very different than your stand-up.
Yes.
This is, you know, of course, a movie that you bring the whole family to see. What attracted you to this project?
Exactly that. Like, I could finally do, you know, for years I've done these Halloween movies, Halloween comedies that was just so raunchy and so wild and full of body parts and liquids and fluids. And I was like, you know what? I'm a dad and I want to do a Halloween movie for my kids. And I did it, but now my kids are grown like you and I should have did some more raunchy comedy.
It's not too late. It's not too late.
One fam, one roof, one tour.
First two seasons were magical. I developed some lasting friendships. You know, it felt good to come back.
Neo's hit dance drama Step Up returns to stars October 16th, this time with a new face, Christina Milian, who joins the cast replacing Naya Rivera, who tragically drowned 2 years ago.
Talk to me about how it felt to embody that role.
It was a big challenge. I had to put some effort into figuring out for me who this character of Colette, this version was for me. And on top of that, with the respects to the previous actor, Naya Rivera, I had so much respect and love for her. I think actresses like her open doors for characters like me, for people like me. And so I wanted to continue to kind of run this marathon, not only for her and to honor her, but also the fans of Step Up.
Fresh off his tour with Chris Brown, Lil Baby is back with new music. The Atlanta rapper drops his album, It's Only Me, this Friday, the 14th.
How can we help you, Sam?
I have a plan that can get us all 100K.
And four desperate friends team up in Scheme Queens to pull off a high-stakes heist in a comedy premiering on Mandolin Pay-Per-View next month.
I'm so excited for Revolt to be here, y'all fam. This is a major moment. This is like, it's unreal.
One of the schemers and Black Girl Stuff co-host Brie Renee looking beautiful in orange at her Atlanta red carpet premiere.
It was really fun to just step outside the box of what my traditional normal roles would be and to be really gangster, really ghetto, really hood, raw.
Something that's never been done was to get the schools on these reloadable debit cards and gift cards so we could start these students on their financial journey.
That's Diddy's senior advisor, Corey Jacobs, on The Big Facts Show, celebrating the success of his program, HBCU on the Green. One of its many goals is to bring financial literacy tools to HBCU students across the country while also highlighting what the unique schools offer.
I want to take a dive into why it's important to encourage youth to attend HBCUs. Berto, can you talk a little bit about that?
I knew by going to HBCU, I was able to be around family, find myself, identify who I was, and identify who I was as a man, as a person, versus what society was telling me. So I think that's why it's important.
Now to the legal headlines that the culture is following, including the caught-on-tape audio leak that has the Los Angeles City Council under fire. That kicks off Who's in the System.
Emotions erupt inside the LA City Hall, demanding action against council members over racist remarks in this leaked audio.
They're waving him like a little white kid, which I was like, this kid needs a beat down. Like, let me take him around the corner and then I'll bring him back.
Yeah.
Councilwoman Nereen Martinez has now resigned. Gil Cedillo and Kevin De Leon are under fire and are being urged to step down after their crude comments about the son of Councilman Mike Bonin.
Lo trae así during Black History Month, lo lleva al council y lo pone acá en el... Remember? Lo trae, it's an accessory. When we do the MLK parade...
Just like when...
They used to have those statues in...
On the ground, activists like Jasmine Kanick demand they all resign.
More than 25 of the blacks have shown up at city council today, y'all.
Oh, they gotta go. You can't hold those feelings about black people and get paid the tax dollars that come from black people in this city and have meetings with the chief of police and other department heads. I don't know what they telling those people. For all I know, they could have been saying arrest more black people, don't hire black people, don't buy from black people. I think this group of people got drunk on their own power. And, you know, they forgot that the very same tactics and strategies that were used to propel them into the position that they have came from the Black Civil Rights Movement. And the irony there is that then they get into this position and then try to hurt the people whose movement they mirrored theirs after to get to where they are today.
They should all step down.
The complaints made its way up the chain and to the White House.
He believes that they all should resign. The language that was used and tolerated during that conversation was unacceptable, and it was appalling.
While the council members have released apologetic statements, activists like Jasmine say too little, too late.
The fact that black people now make up less than 9% of the city of Los Angeles' population, but we make up the majority of people who are unhoused, who are homeless. Latinos make up more than half of the city's population, which is another reason why what we heard in that audio was so atrocious.
We'll stay on top of these headlines. There's more Revolt Black News Weekly when we return. Welcome back to Revolt Black.
Limba Chicken Chow Mein, Mkhetwa, a.k.a. Big Wara.
Yo, it's Big Fred, a.k.a. Ntate Thusawadi Podcast.
Kiki Tubafetu, and we are the Sobering Podcast.
Tune in to us every second Wednesday for fire conversations and interviews about South African music, sneakers, and street culture.
Check us out on the Revolt Podcast Network.
Shout out to our moms.
Black News Weekly, everyone. I'm guest correspondent Demetria Obelor. And tonight, we are having the candid conversation about body positivity and asking the question, how far have we really come in regards to the fashion runway and reality?
Social media held a close eye on designers for their choice of diverse representation during this year's Fashion Week. And while some were happy, everyone hasn't exactly felt plus-size representation efforts are as genuine as they should be.
Super skimpy, super tiny, lots of skin, no modesty allowed, okay? Then they go and put their only plus model of the entire show in this outfit that makes no sense with the collection. It just tells me that you just want to get the diversity points and move on, and you don't actually care.
All of these brands, it's like a peek-a-boo game. They choose when they want to push that if there's tension starting to build up.
And the tension did indeed build. This week, Vogue responded to the lack of body positive diversity during Fashion Week with this bold headline, "Is my body about to go out of style?" They cite a seasonal report on diversity from the shows released by The Fashion Spot. In the report, they found that since spring 2016, size inclusivity has steadily increased, peaking in the spring 2020 season with 68 plus size models appearing in shows, accounting for about 5% of total castings. And when it comes to models of color on the runway, a very slight increase from spring 2022's 48% to a whopping 48.6%.
I do believe for darker complexion women who are plus size models, I do believe that they don't get enough representation here, and they're not featured as much.
Tyra Banks is one top model that knows a thing or two about diversity in the modeling industry, and she's been vocal about what she's learned in retrospect.
I started America's Next Top Model as a very early voice about diversity and inclusion. People didn't even know what a plus-size model was like 20 years ago. They're like, what? What is that?
Okay, Robin.
Now, are we shooting for the large size category?
Yes, Robin would represent a plus-size model.
She's huge. She's not going to be a top model.
I don't have a market here for Robin. You know, there's no market for plus sizes in France.
She is a full-figured Black woman.
At that same time, I was still a working model. And still being told, oh, you're too fat, Tyra, you're too this, you're too that, you can't work if you can't do that.
I am a curve model because I am a size 10 to 12. From 14 and up, you're a plus size model.
Sports Illustrated really opened the door this year for me. I mean, like, bat swinging for your girl. Savage X really opened the gate swinging. I have some of my plus models that I look up to. Precious is one.
We have Precious, you know, we have Ashley Garham and what so forth. And these are the main, like, you know, no, because there's so much more women. There's not a lot of us. And they pick and choose who can be that top. We may all be the same size, but our shapes are structured out differently.
I'm a very curvy woman. I have a small waist and then it just gets bigger as you go down. Because I have a lot of cellulite, that's not appealing to brands. It's not appealing because that's too real sometimes.
Joining in the conversation is author and journalist Crystal Jordan and body liberation activist Simone Mariposa. All right, so we're gonna get straight into it right now. Crystal, I mean, what's your opinion? How much progress has the fashion industry really made when it comes to Black women and body diversity?
Well, I believe that there has been some progress made. I don't think that we can ignore the fact that we do see, you know, plus size or average size women at this point modeling clothes. We even see mannequins in the stores. Things are changing. That's not to say that we don't have a long way to go, but a few years ago, there were actors and singers that couldn't even get a designer to style for them, you know, and today we see that's changing. We see, I think of like Christian Siriano, who is someone that, you know, designs and actually has clothes in his collections for all sizes, and we've seen his sales triple.
But a lot of that resulted from people who had to literally plead and say, nobody is dressing me.
Right.
So what would be your response to people who claim that this motion in the fashion industry to be inclusive is all performative?
That's a very good point. You know, and I'm thinking about that because we have to realize that every industry is driven by what's going to make money, right? Mm-hmm. And so it is very on trend right now to be inclusive. And so a lot of these designers are tapping in to this, to the full size or curvier women because that's what's on trend right now. We have to continue making sure that we hold these designers accountable and we keep making sure that they're not just doing this while it makes good news and it makes good press, but that they continue to, you know, to show up for us.
Those
are
some good points. No, I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. So Simone, I mean, in terms of the fashion industry, do you feel like they're doing enough, these big brands, on embracing fuller figured women?
I think that, similar to what Crystal said, there is a lot of progress that's been made, but a lot of times I do see that in fashion shows or in campaigns, a lot of times the full figured woman is a token. Mm-hmm. Similar to what she said, it's really about the trend and like what's popular, but kind of removing that tokenization of a different body and adding it into the mainstream fashion world.
It's interesting that you say that though, because Tabria Majors, beautiful plus size model, I mean, she's killing the game, right? Mm-hmm. But it was just this past September 2022 where she came out and said, hey, Fashion Week, not inclusive, not doing enough, and using her platform to hold these brands accountable. I mean, what's your take on that? I mean, when you really looked at Fashion Week 2022 this past fall, only 5% of the models were even plus size. And when we talk about what America looks like, I mean, around 70% of American women are plus size. Right. So not really reflective of what we're seeing, you know, strutting down the runway. I mean, what's your take on that, ladies?
I agree. I think there's still a part of fashion that's very much exclusive. Mm-hmm. So it's like there's not as much of a push for diversity because it's like we're still trying to keep the haute couture look, the high fashion look, which is thin, lighter skinned. We're not showing any curves. But I think it's really about really pushing for that, not really settling for the, well, we gave you guys what you wanted. Mm-hmm. We've quieted you down, mm-hmm. so that's enough. We're going to go back to what fashion really should look like. It's really still about pushing beyond that.
Oh, yeah.
I think that, you know, the great thing about what's happening right now, you know, social media is a big part of this conversation. And we have talent that are no longer, you know, listening to their team and they're saying, no, this is what needs to be. We have Rihanna, who's one of the most fashion forward icons in our culture, mm-hmm. who has shown up whatever size she has been. We've seen her go from being very small when she was younger to, you know, having her baby, displaying her entire pregnancy, and then even afterwards, you know, still being fashion forward. She never took a break.
No.
You know, from her fashions.
Well, you know, I'm hearing Jordan. Accountability, and of course these celebrities, these influencers using their platform mm-hmm. to create lanes for all of us. But yes. I think it was interesting. I mean, take it to 2020, right? Let's rewind things a little bit. Mm-hmm. The pandemic. Yeah. A lot of retailers scaled back on their plus size clothing lines. I mean, Old Navy was one of them. And I think that it was great of you to bring up Rihanna because I feel like she basically forced a lot of these retailers in the beginning to either ante up or mm-hmm. literally go bankrupt.
Get left out.
Without this inclusivity. So, I mean, let's talk a little bit more about social media. Do you feel like what's happening right on our, you know, phone screens, computer screens is really reflective, though, of the mentality of what's happening in these high-powered fashion houses?
I think the streets are talking more mm-hmm. than the high fashion houses. You know, I think when it comes to more a colloquial sense, like when people are like, I want you to be featured in my fashion show. Mm-hmm. I think I'm much more likely to see someone who has a boutique shop attempt to cater to mm-hmm. someone like me versus a high fashion house. And then when they do try to like cater to plus sizes, you only go up to a 20, 22, mm-hmm. 24.
And even then, they're not always, they don't
and
even
they
fit that well.
Size. Exactly.
They ain't got no stretch at them. Let's
no
just
stretch
be honest,
at all.
Right?
Like, yeah. Like big girls need stretch. Like
exactly.
That's just how our clothes should fit. Like yeah. In order to, you know, accentuate our curves and yes. to, you know, for us to feel comfortable, we have to accommodate to the size, to our sizes. And then on top of that, we're not looking for fashion that's the same cut bigger. Mm-hmm. What we need is fit models to cater to our body types. Because just because you make something in the same pattern mm-hmm. up to a 3X doesn't mean it's going to fit the same way mm-hmm. as it does a smaller body. Mm-hmm. It's laziness. I think it's lack of care. Mm-hmm. I think when you come from a place of love and actually wanting to supply beautiful fashion for mm-hmm. all bodies, you're not going to take a shortcut. You're going to want to.
What's your take on that, Crystal? Yeah.
I think we have to be realistic. I worked for a clothing brand early on in my career, and I remember like a size, what is advertised as a size 20, a lot of times the actual model is not that size, or it's a person that has a flat, like is a freak of nature, like mm-hmm. they've got a super flat stomach,
or and they've been altered surgically.
That's the yeah. thing, and that's uh-huh. what we have to be honest about. And so a lot of things that we see, I do think that social media has a huge voice because these high fashion houses have to pay attention to what actually is on trend, and we see that on social media. But I think the problem is they're not getting true to life women. If you're a size 14, but you have been altered and you have a super flat stomach mm-hmm. and all your curves are in certain places that would not be there physically, mm-hmm. you know, naturally, then it's yeah. not really fair to use that to advertise plus size or a curvy size.
Oh, wow. Some great perspectives there, ladies. I mean, I'm all about body positivity and pushing it forward. And I think right. that we have so much more to do.
Absolutely.
All right. But we appreciate your fight. Right. Thank you so much for joining us here on Revolt Black News. When we come back, our revolutionary of the week. Welcome back. We leave you with an inspiring Morehouse grad who's cutting through the noise for aspiring musicians.
It all started with an app that's shaking the foundation when it comes to producing music.
The unconventional process of the brain trust behind the beats makes the United Market platform our revolutionary of the week.
You may be wondering, what is the United Market?
Sincere Smith and Ron Freeman recently graduated from Morehouse College, and their next venture is taking them around the globe, all through technology.
Our users have been enjoying our platform is the collaborative aspect, both so being able to connect with other producers, to be able to send audio files and collaborate in real time remotely across the globe.
In between classes, the two created United Market, a business platform for music production professionals like producers, engineers, DJs, and A&Rs.
We have users across the globe from Athens, Greece, to Belgium, to Sweden, to Denmark, and they're all able to collaborate remotely and basically work together to kind of get their next placement.
The platform, now heading into its 2.0 phase, came together after realizing a need to advocate for musicians with a dollar and a dream.
Us using our network and our accessibility to connect the dots and kind of fill those gaps within the music industry that we see so many creatives lack and, you know, complain about they don't have.
And so we started talking to more musicians and talking through their problems and what pain points they had, and we're like, you know, that market was really putting a solution to help them specifically. And so we furthermore on talked to more and more producers and artists and kind of pinpointed, hey, how can we come into this play and make you guys either work more efficiently or help you guys get more plaques in the wall?
That kind of thinking is what attracted dozens of artists to sign up to cash in and get a slice of the music industry pie. Ron and Sincere say they're just getting started.
For our mission and what we're trying to do within the music industry, I think we're going to be so different and so revolutionary because we'll be able to have more data than the average label or music can have access to. On top of the direct accessibility and different features that we'll have on our platform, I think that'll take us to the next level.
Definitely a game-changing app for musicians. Make sure you download it. That wraps it up for us.
And remember to keep up with us on Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel.
We'll see you next time. Bye.
Hey there, ever thought about what makes your heart beat a little faster?
Oh, you mean like when you discover a new track that just speaks to you?
Yeah, or finding a movie that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, get ready to feel that excitement all over again because Amazon Prime is here to take your entertainment and shopping experience to the next level.
Absolutely. Prime isn't just about getting your packages quicker. It's about diving into a world of endless possibilities, from the latest releases to exclusive content you won't find anywhere else.
And don't even get me started on the music. Prime offers concert specials that will transport you right to the front row. It's like being at the hottest gigs without leaving your living room.
I use Prime to tap in with some of my favorite artists' live shows from any and every genre of music.
Trust me, Prime is a game changer. It's like having a personalized superstore and entertainment hub right at your fingertips.
So why wait? Head over to Amazon.com/Prime and start experiencing entertainment like never before.